Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Consumer Business Briefing. I'm joined by Stephen Harris, our CFO, and Christian Thrane, our MD of Marketing. Now, it's been over a couple of years since we last did our consumer briefing, so there's a lot to update you on, a lot of progress, and a lot of things to cover as well. I'd like to, as always, draw your attention to the forward-looking statement that's in the presentation. And when I look at what we wanted to cover with you today, there's so much going on in the consumer business and the marketplace, but I thought a lot about the most important things that we should be covering with you during this presentation. So firstly, a really big topic, which is the progress that we've made on addressing the loyalty gap, fairness in the marketplace, as well as market pricing and how we see that evolving and the progress we've made there. Secondly, I'm really proud of the real progress that we've made as a team on our brand and service platform, and our customers are really feeling the difference, so we're going to share the progress that we're making there. Then we're going to look at the opportunity that we see ahead. Whilst we've made progress and good progress on convergence, there's a lot more opportunity ahead for us, and we're going to talk about our approach to that in the market. There's a huge amount going on in terms of customer behavior and channels. When I look at retail and digital transformation and what we're seeing in the marketplace, we want to take you through all of that as well. And finally, we also have been working as a team and discussing how we can help you better with some new metrics on top of the ones that we provide today to help you understand the consumer business better. So Stephen will be taking you through those later on. But before I go into those important topics, let's first just ground ourselves into the consumer business so you can understand it better. Many of you know this, but we are the largest business in the BT Group by revenue, very significant part of the company. We have the largest customer base in the country across fixed and mobile. We have the best mobile network and access to the biggest and best fixed network. We have uniquely a UK-wide, nationwide sales and service platform, which has been really important for us, particularly over the last few months as we've needed to provide extra support for our customers. And we have fantastic partnerships, some of the largest and smallest and most innovative companies on the planet, both from a hardware and services and content point of view. We've got great partnerships. And I also felt it was important to remind everybody that whilst EE came into BT Group in 2016, remind you that for 2 years we were running EE and BT Consumer as separate divisions, so there was no real integration going on, certainly from a consumer marketplace point of view. But since then, since 2018 when we did create the consumer division and I was appointed to lead it, we've been really busy working hard in integrating the teams, the channels, the platforms, the capabilities. Some of this we'll share with you later. And everybody in my team now has a multi-brand responsibility. So we're one integrated consumer team now. And despite what you all know is an intensely competitive marketplace, it's very crowded with many brands and many competitors out there and lots of activity. And of course, we've had our own activity going on with the large-scale integration that we've had to do of docking EE into BT Group. Despite all of that, we've performed really well, I think, from a revenue and an EBITDA point of view, a solid performance over the last few years. And, of course, we highlighted last quarter the impact of COVID and regulation on the business. And I've mentioned the integration of EE. I do want to pause for a minute and reflect here because we don't share all of these numbers with you on a quarterly basis, and I felt it would be important to stand back and look at how the integration's gone. This is an enormous integration, the UK's number one mobile network with a very large business in BT. Lots of opportunity, as you all know, with M&A activity and integrations for things to go wrong, but they've gone really right. We're really proud, and I think the team have done a fantastic job of making this a real success. If you look at the pay monthly base growth of 9%, the revenue in our pay monthly base, which is the most valuable part of our business, of 11% during that time, growth in margin of 12%, whilst in parallel improving customer experience to the best ever levels and improving our brand to be the strongest brand in our portfolio and a market leading brand as well. So we've done all of those things over the last few years and I'm very proud of the work of the team. The job, of course, is never done, but a few years on now, I can look at this integration and say that's a job well done from the team. The BT brand I saw 2 years ago when I looked at it is a turnaround job. I want to be honest about that. I want to face into the facts as I saw them. These are not opinions. These are facts in terms of how we were performing in the marketplace. We've been losing gross add and net add share for many years, since before 2016. That's reflected on this chart. We had amongst the highest churn in the industry, which was reflected in the lowest customer satisfaction scores in the industry and the highest complaints. So for me, that wasn't a great recipe for us to build a successful platform. So we needed to address all of these metrics. And I'm really pleased to say that they are all now turning in the right direction, whether it's our net adds performance, where we've turned positive for the first time in a very long time, as you can see here. The progress we're making on churn and loyalty, there's still improvements to come, but we're making really good progress there. The growth in full fiber, and I'll come back to that. Our brand NPS, positive for the first time. And that's it's been a big success. But of course, I'm not happy with just turning positive. We have to be much better than we are. But I want to give you all confidence that this brand is turning in the right direction. All these indicators are turning in the right direction. And when I look at customer complaints, it's another great indicator of real progress. And you've all seen a new identity for the BT brand, new advertising, and new brand work, which I believe is a lot more modern and confident in terms of where we're going, reflects more who we are as a company and how we want to be seen by our customers. Our service transformation has been phenomenal. The team have worked so hard over the last couple of years, putting in place a fantastic and unique platform for our customers, irrespective of the brand that they're on, whether it's BT or EE. They can access our nationwide retail estate with sales and service capability now. We've got nationwide home tech experts. We've got every single one of our phone calls to customer service now being answered in the U.K. We're unique in this place as an operator, and I believe this is really important in terms of how we think about the standards that our customers should have from us in the support that we give them. And we have made great progress. There are many areas I could point to. I want to look at complaints, where our BT complaints down 70% in the last couple of years, now below industry average, and we're on a path to be the best in the next few quarters. The brand NPS I've talked to. And also, we've been doing that whilst making our operation more efficient. We have a benchmark in EE in terms of operational excellence and cost base and productivity, and our BT teams have been reaching many of those levels or getting much closer than before. And that's really important for us as well when we think about cost and efficiency. So we've been improving service whilst becoming more efficient as well, which is a great recipe for us. It has been, as you all know, an eventful few months, not for the right reasons, in sports. Lots of disruption in the sports industry. Lots of disruption for us and customers as well. However, I do want to focus on the progress that we have been making in sport. I think it's important that we remember that sport as a product was free at launch, and we've shifted from that strategy to monetizing sport. Every single one of our customers now pays for sport. The pricing for sport is very clear. It's £15 a month on average for our BT customers, and customers who aren't part of BT and want the flexibility of a monthly pass pay £25. So that has reduced the base somewhat, but the customers we've shed largely are those that were getting the product for free. We've boosted revenues by over 60% by expanding distribution onto new platforms, the addition of the monthly pass, and looking at other new avenues through both wholesale and retail. And we've done all of that whilst being very disciplined on cost. We have made it very clear to rights holders and how we think about things that we certainly do not see an inflationary environment in rights. We're very clear what they're worth, and we won't pay a penny more for them. And that's reflected in keeping those costs largely flat over the last few years. As we look to the future, the opportunity for us in mobile is it's all there to play for. I've talked to you about the strength of the brand and the momentum that we've got behind the integration now. We're in a really good place to look at the opportunities ahead. And of course, the big opportunity for us is this migration to 5G, this wonderful new technology that's going to make such a difference for customers. And we're off to a great start. We were the first provider in the UK to launch 5G back in May. We have got a network leadership position in coverage and reliability and speed that is a long way from our nearest competitors. So we're in a really good place to capitalize on what is going to be a very busy 5G market. I've been looking at the handset ranges over the next 12, 18 months from all sorts of vendors, and they're going to stretch to all sorts of price points, making it much more accessible. We've got great price plans with lots of flexibility for customers. We've got, as I said, a fantastic device range, the widest device range of any network provider. And uniquely for us, the partnership strength that we have today, I've just announced the exclusive that we have on the world's first 5G laptop, which we're excited about selling for the prosumer category. We've got exclusive augmented reality glasses coming from Nreal. We've got partnerships with the likes of Xbox and Niantic that will be exclusive. So we've got a lot of opportunity ahead to really bring 5G to life for customers, and we're very excited about that. As always, a lot of focus on Apple with their announcement ahead of us on the 13th of October, and we've been building a very strong partnership with Apple, which culminated a couple of weeks ago. You'll have seen a global first for us and Apple, which is integrating their services into our customers' price plans, the first time that's ever been done, and really testament to the partnership that we have, that the two companies have managed to work together and bring that to customers in the UK for the very first time. And like the pioneering spirit we have in mobile, where we were the first to launch 5G, the first to launch 4G, we're also pioneers in fixed and full fiber. And we've really been adopting the full fiber network. We think it's so important for customers to experience the best network that's out there. And we've been connecting as many homes as we can. We've gone very quickly north of 500,000 homes. And we really see this as an important platform for convergence in the future. And we'll talk more about the opportunity that presents a little later on. So in summary, great progress so far in the last couple of years since we saw you last on the integration of EE, the brand turnaround that we're starting to see on BT across so many metrics, and the fantastic service and brand platform that we're creating for our customers. Really good momentum there. Now, what I want to do is go into more detail on those important topics that I said we'd cover at the very beginning. So the first very important topic I want to talk to you about is pricing, fairness, and market competitiveness. So when I look at and think about pricing, I think about three key things that we needed to address. And it wasn't a question of dealing with just one of these things or two. All three needed to be dealt with. And the first was, how could we become more competitive in the marketplace? You saw the charts earlier on that we were losing share and not having enough momentum in the marketplace, particularly in the broadband space, particularly on the BT brand. At the same time, there was a huge amount of scrutiny and focus from customers, from the regulator, and from other consumer bodies on the important topics of loyalty and fairness and how we can treat our customers better and improve the way we treat customers in this marketplace, which, you know, I believe there is some room for improvement, and I'm happy to say we've made some massive strides to making this market fairer. So let's start with market competitiveness. I showed you the chart earlier on, and you can see that this strategy is working. We're very clear that we need to compete in the marketplace, and we're very clear that we will not tolerate losing share like we have done in the past on broadband and on the BT brand. And so we've implemented a very competitively priced entry-level product and a price point that moves up and down according to the market and the way the market moves. And every time the market moves, we will move. And then our opportunity is to upsell and grow those ARPUs through upselling to faster speeds, through a more for more approach, looking at the convergence opportunity through mobile, through TV, through entertainment, and other services like Complete Wi-Fi and Home Tech Experts that we can also monetize. Now I want to turn to the loyalty gap and fairness. As I said, we've listened to customers, we listened to regulator, consumer bodies, and we've taken decisive action on four key issues that I want to break down that we've been addressing. And the first is the mechanic and the model that still persists today in the broadband market of very high out-of-contract prices. So the customers are brought in on low acquisition prices, and then the out-of-contract price grows at an accelerated level for some providers with very little certainty for the customer. We had 1 million customers until very recently on old copper networks having a poor experience than we'd have liked. And we had no real proposition mechanic to reward customers' loyalty. And on top of that, we were doing multiple price rises at multiple times on multiple products. So these are the key areas that we wanted to address. And I'll start with the out-of-contract price, and I'm sharing with you where we were back in 2009. The average out-of-contract price for our customer base was around 13. We implemented a cap as part of the fairness agenda and the agreement that we made with Ofcom of £8, and I believe we can successfully transition to £5 in the next few years. So that's giving a lot of customers certainty. It's also important to remind you that our Halo customers do not get an out-of-contract price increase. When I look at the copper base, 1 million customers, 650,000 of whom were eligible to move to fibre, either fibre to the cabinet or full fibre. We've migrated every single one of those customers across now over the last few months. Those that weren't eligible for fibre, we've priced them down. So anyone on an old technology is not paying more than a new technology. And that's been part of the regulatory drag and costs that we've talked to you about during the course of this year. I mentioned Halo. This is another important driver in how we've been reducing the back book, front book loyalty gap for customers. We've been rewarding our loyal customers. The start point of this proposition, it's our lead convergence vehicle for the BT brand, but the start point for it is how can we reward customers' loyalty. So we've done that by ensuring that our existing customers pay no more and in many cases less than new customers. There is no out-of-contract price rise. So you think about this and you look at the evolution of the customer base. We've gone from no customers to 2 million customers with no out-of-contract price rise. This is another big factor reducing that loyalty gap. And, of course, Halo customers get loads of other benefits too, all part of convergence, and we've got a new exciting chapter of Halo coming in the next few weeks and months. And so this has been the result. We've made significant progress in closing the loyalty gap. The scale on the left, I'm not going to give you all of the numbers, but it's hundreds of millions of pounds. So this was a big number, reduced by 30% from 18 to 20. And I believe, looking at our plans, looking at growth in Halo, the implementation of out-of-contract price caps and that reduction, the migration of the copper base, what we've done with Halo and the future base growth of Halo, that gap's going to close by another 50%. In the next 3 years. Now, I've made a very big change to pricing recently. I'm sure it may come up in Q&A, but I want to talk to you about the rationale for that and what drove us to change the mechanic. I think, as I've done in this presentation in a few areas, it's important to look back and remind ourselves of where we were before we think about where we are now. And two or three years ago, as you can see, across every product on every brand, apart from mobile on EE, every single one of our price rises was on an ad hoc timing basis and an ad hoc amount. And most of the industry still operates this way. And we decided it was important to change. I felt it was important to steady the ship on the BT brand with the implementation of CPI as a mechanic and the price freeze, and you've seen the operational metrics that drove me to make that decision. We needed to steady the ship and buy some time. I'm now confident in the service platform we've built, the propositions we have, the pricing strategy, the approach that we've got to the loyalty gap, that we can now evolve our pricing mechanic to the next phase. That's what we introduced on the 1st of September. A big part of this rationale was convergence. We're seeing increasing numbers of our customers buying more than one product from us, and you'll hear more about convergence later from Christian. They're buying more broadband with mobile and TV and entertainment and sport. Increasingly, we see an opportunity for customers to buy between the brands. A BT broadband customer buying EE Mobile is an increasing part of the opportunity that we have. It did not make sense to have inconsistent timing and amounts and mechanics across brands and across products. I think this is upfront for customers, it is fair, and it reflects what I believe is the right thing to do when we think about market pricing. One of the other drivers has been looking at the cost of data. The analogy I always use is electricity or gas or food. If you were using 50% more electricity in your home every single year, buying 50% more food, buying 50% more gas, would you expect your bills to be going up by around 50%? I think you would. Whereas in our industry, you use 50%, in some cases, 100% more data, and the model that we've created at the moment in the eyes of the consumer is you pay no more and actually less in many cases. I think somehow we've got to change the model, change the mindset, and the market leader as we are, we have to lead the way in terms of how we think about the model. I've also been looking at the growth in fixed data. Mobile data and mobile capacity and mobile costs get a lot of attention. When we've pioneered the growth in FTTP, and we see the difference between the data usage of an FTTP customer versus FTTC, it's double. We look at the future projections of customers and all of the new services that they're enjoying in their homes and all the new devices and content and entertainment and gaming and working that they're doing, we can see our data costs rising in our core network on fixed. We have to recover those costs. That's been another driver, as well as, of course, the low inflationary environment that we see over the next couple of years. I've covered some very important topics. I'll be back very soon, and I've talked a lot about the opportunity of convergence, and I'm now going to invite Christian to the stage, who's going to tell us a lot more. Thank you. Christian.
Thank you, Mark. Hello, everyone. I'm Christian Thrane. I lead the consumer marketing team across products, propositions, and brands. I recently joined BT from Telenor Group, where I was leading the consumer business in Telenor Sweden across brands, across mobile, broadband, and TV. I'm very excited to have joined the team. I think it's a very strong team, and I'm very excited to work with some of the strongest brands in the industry. Looking at the opportunity, I'm very excited to work with the team to capture this opportunity. I'm going to start talking about the household footprint we have across the U.K. and talk about how we look at the opportunity. We have access to, and we have presence in around 50% of the households across the U.K. 3 million of those households buy both mobile and broadband from us. Some of these households have one mobile line, some of these households have two mobile lines, three mobile lines, or more. Another 11 million households have either a mobile connection from us or a fixed connection from us. 1 million households are served by Plusnet, which is our sub-brand, supporting us in driving presence in the price-sensitive segments. We've seen a quite encouraging development over the last years. We've been able to grow our converged share of households from around 15% to 21%. When we look at this opportunity, we look at this in three ways. We look at our ability to drive more households. We look at the opportunity we have in driving a higher share of convergence into the mobile households and the broadband households, and we look at the opportunity to take a larger share of wallet in all the households that we serve, with more mobile lines or services into the household. So I'm going to talk about convergence, and I'm talking about what we've done and how we look at the opportunity. I'm going to look at the progress we've made with Halo. I'm going to talk about how we plan to bring the best of BT and the best of EE together to capture more value from the opportunity in convergence. And I'm going to talk about the capabilities we've built in order for us to capture this opportunity. So I'm going to start looking at the capabilities we've built. And I'll start by saying that this is 2 years into the journey, we've made significant progress, but this is work that is ongoing. If I look at the propositions and the product, 2 years ago, we were only cross-selling within the brand. So we were selling BT Mobile to our BT Broadband customers. We were selling EE Home to our EE Mobile customers. Today, we were able to sell BT Broadband to our EE Mobile base and EE Mobile to our BT Broadband base. If you look at this from a CRM and analytics perspective, we came from a situation where we had multiple systems for BT and multiple systems for EE. Now we're using the same system to drive decisioning and analytics on both sides. But look at this from a billing and customer management perspective. We're now able to link accounts from BT with accounts from EE and apply a benefit or a discount across the two accounts. From a channel and cross-selling perspective, today our agents in retail and customer service are able to look into the systems on both sides, and we've created a platform to effectively sell products across the two customer bases. So we're really excited about this opportunity. Again, this is an ongoing journey, and these type of capability building takes time in a company of our size. But the capabilities we've already built allows us to capture opportunities that we were not able to do a couple of years ago. When we talk about convergence, and I'll just pause a little bit here and talk about the way we look at convergence, we take a customer lens. We look at the household, and we look at our ability to sell multiple products, multiple subscriptions into a household. When I look at a household, I see one broadband line, I see multiple mobile lines. I see the number of connected devices increase, we'll see devices inside the home, we'll see devices that require mobile connectivity outside the home. I look at services, and I see services that are relevant on your mobile connection and on your broadband connection. And many of these services are used by more members of a household. That could be TV, could be gaming, could be music, could be OTT, it could be security for that matter. So we're really excited about the opportunity we have to drive a higher share of wallets, share a higher presence, more mobile lines and services into the households we serve. If I then take one step back and look at Halo and the success we have established with Halo since we launched it a bit more than a year ago. Halo has been a key vehicle for us to both drive convergence on the BT side, but also drive loyalty in a very important part of our customer base. We've driven 2.3 million households into the Halo proposition, and in the Halo base compared to the non-Halo base, we see a higher number of connections. We see a 15% higher ARPU, and we see a significantly higher customer satisfaction measured by NPS. And the reason for that are the services and the benefits that are included in the Halo offering. So customers, should it happen, lose their broadband connection, we will promise them a mobile fallback so that they have a mobile connection. They have access to home tech experts. We enable them to give twice the mobile data. They have no out-of-contract price rises. Mark talked about that earlier. And customers in Halo will see a guarantee that their price will be as good or better than that of new customers entering our base. We are currently working on the next chapter of Halo, and while Halo has been quite successful, or very successful, we also see limitations in primarily the mobile penetration into the base and the value of that. So when we take a step back and look at the capabilities and the brands we have the strongest brand in the mobile industry. We have 7 years rolling the best mobile network, now also the best 5G network. We are number one in first choice purchase intent in the mobile category across all major segments. We have the strongest broadband connection and fastest and most reliable broadband with BT. And both the brands we have across awareness, consideration, and first choice purchase intent is more than twice that of the other brand. When we talk to our customers about the opportunity to introduce offers across the two customer bases, we see that primarily the high-value customers say that the quality, the brand value, is much more important for them than the price. That's one element. We also see that one-third of customers immediately say that there is an appeal in bringing those products across. They prefer specialist brands over compromising. I talked about the value of driving mobile penetration into household, and if we look at the ARPU across the BT mobile base and the EE base, there is a significant difference. So the EE brand is stronger. It brings devices, it brings partnerships, it brings insurance, it brings service packs. It allows you an opportunity to link your Apple Watch or your Samsung Watch. So there's so much richness in that offer that drives a higher ARPU. With the EE brand, we believe we also have a strong opportunity to drive revenue from new categories in the household. This journey really started a bit more than a year ago when we brought broadband into our high street retail stores. And if we look at the broadband sales in the stores and in the call center teams that have also introduced BT broadband on our EE base, we see sales go up by 30-40%. That's quite encouraging. When we look at it the other way around and look at the BT teams that sell BT mobile, and when we introduce the EE mobile to those teams, we see an increase of around 30%. And part of the reason you see on this slide, bringing together the full strength of the two brands, bringing the best and most reliable Wi-Fi connection with complete Wi-Fi, security, home tech expert, exclusive content, and potentially gaming partnerships, combine that with the best mobile network, with service pack, with partnership offerings, with the right devices, Apple smartwatch, Samsung smartwatch, family plans, insurance. We believe we have a portfolio which helps us unlock more value from convergence in the households that we serve. TV is another core component in serving a household. And we've really been on a journey with our TV proposition. If you look at our TV proposition 2 years ago, we were in a situation where we did not have content which was relevant and attractive to the customers we served. Today, we're able to bring all relevant content to our customers. That's a major step forward. We're not stopping there. We're looking at leveraging the best fixed connection with the best mobile connection to ensure a seamless TV experience in and out of the home. We are introducing a new set-top box which will allow us to provide multi-room functionality. We're looking at continuously strengthening our partnership portfolio and make that a core part of the way we go to market. We will increasingly personalize the experience and the subscription, and we'll be looking to continuously work with our sports portfolio as well as introducing other parts of entertainment into the household, which could be gaming, for instance. So overall, we look at a TV proposition and an entertainment proposition that we're looking to strengthen in the coming years. If I then sort of pause a little bit and talk about sort of what did I cover, we really believe that we have a significant opportunity in driving more households, more convergence into the households we serve today, and win a larger wallet share in the households via mobile and via services. We believe we have an opportunity by bringing the full strength of the BT brand, the full strength of the EE brand, to help us drive more value from convergence over and above and together with our Halo proposition. And we believe that we are on a journey and we have built very important capabilities already to help us capture this opportunity. So with that, back to you, Mark.
Thank you, Christian. I think really, really explaining and opening up the opportunity we have in convergence really well there. I thought it'd be helpful, over the last few months, of course, we've seen massive change in customer behavior, massive changes in how people are buying and the channels that they're using. So I thought it would be helpful to open up what we've seen so far and how we see things going forward. So let's look at our channels in a bit more detail. I think the first key message here is that we are 90% a direct channel business across sales and upgrades for BTE and Plusnet. 90% of all our transactions are now going through our direct channels, digital, telesales, retail, home tech. Second interesting thing that we see is retail is actually doing okay. Sales are up 7% post-lockdown versus pre-lockdown. It's too early to call this a long-term trend, and I know a lot of retailers are struggling right now, but for us, retail is doing okay. We do see a big difference between stores in the cities and stores in suburban areas, and understandably our footfall in the cities is lower as many of our customers are working from home and spending time outside of the cities. We see digital flying. Our digital upgrades up around 100% pre and post lockdown. Sales up 30% and visits to our service platform of MyEE and MyBT up 40%. So huge demand for customers to use our digital sales and service channels. In mobile, you'll have seen in the last few weeks, we've confirmed the exit from Dixon's Carphone. From the 1st of October, we're no longer on sale there for new and existing customers. This is part of an evolution to a almost solely direct model that we've been deploying through mobile. And you can see the reasons why that's important for us. When we look at return on investment, when we look at the uptake of additional lines, you've heard how important convergence is to us and selling more products and services. And when we look at the loyalty and the churn rates of customers from direct versus indirect channels, you can see the reason why we favor a direct model. And when you have a strong brand and you have a strong operation and strong channel management and great people, you can do this. We do see digital as a great opportunity. We see it as an opportunity to reduce costs, improve efficiency. We see our digital channel share being two or three times what it is now, so very, very big growth going into the future. We can see a path to between 100 and 200 million a year of OPEX efficiency through our channels as we optimize our contact center and retail estate. And we see a lot of benefits for customers and our teams who what we can do is take away some of the lower value, more manual tasks that they do and get them really focusing on high value specialist sales and service because they're fantastic teams. Now, I mentioned we've been thinking a lot about how we can help you understand the consumer business better, so I'm going to ask Stephen Harris, our CFO, to talk about the new metrics that we're going to be sharing with you. Thank you.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Mark. As Mark says, we've taken this opportunity to evolve our externally reported metrics. We hope that will give even greater transparency. It should also provide further understanding of what our strategy actually is, but also allow all of you a greater ability to track our delivery against that strategy. In essence, there's four areas that we're going to enhance. I'll start with fixed. Today we report fixed revenue and fixed ARPU. We're going to break out or exclude Solus Voice and additionally report broadband revenue, broadband ARPU, and broadband churn as well. The reason we've done this is, as you all know, Solus Voice is a product that's in decline. And secondly, in some ways, it detracts from what you want to see. Our focus is on growing broadband, growing convergence. Breaking out Solus Voice very much allows you to see our success in that metric. Staying on fixed, the second area is we're revising our reporting of churn. And in essence, we are now going to exclude inter-brand churn across consumer on our fixed portfolio. The reason is very simple. If a customer moves from EE or to BT or to PlusNet on their broadband connection. For consumer, that really isn't external churn. So we're going to remove that. Additionally, it also aligns to how we report churn in our mobile arena. The third area is convergence. You've seen today, convergence is key to our strategy going forward. And therefore, in addition to RGUs, we're now going to have the additional convergence metric, measuring the percentage of our base that have both a broadband and a mobile connection. For us, that's particularly important as we accelerate the best of both strategy, which clearly is our most value accretive combination, but it can be for any mixture of brands. So it can be EE Mobile with BT Broadband, it can be BT Mobile with BT Broadband, whichever the combination, but we do see that as an important metric going forwards for you all to track. And then finally, again linking to our strategy, we are going to start reporting our installed base, as well as our 5G ready base. This is in addition to still reporting super fast and ultra fast, but we felt it was important that you can see the absolute growth as we accelerate both those bases in the future. We will start reporting all of these additional metrics from our Q2 results, which you'll obviously see in a few weeks' time. We've just got a couple of charts sharing some of those metrics, so to bring them to life, so you can see the difference between our historic fixed ARPU, and you can now see when we exclude Solus Voice, what our broadband ARPU looks like, and what it also our future churn metrics will look like as well. A couple of things I will draw out from here. Q1 clearly was impacted by COVID-19. From an ARPU point of view, our strategy is absolutely to maintain our current ARPU levels, or historic ARPU levels from last year. That will be augmented by our growth will come from what you've heard Mark and Christian talk about this afternoon, our growth in convergence, our growth in cross-sell, upsell, maximizing the value, the share of wallet that we have from our customer bases today. And you can see from a churn point of view, the stripping out of inter-brand churn on fixed makes about a 0.1% difference. I'll also share with you here our fixed mobile convergence. As you saw from Christian's slide earlier on, over the last 4 years, there's been a 40% increase in the number of our customers taking both fixed and mobile from consumer. You can also see the trend over the last year, and again, there's been a percentage point improvement just over the last year, and we expect that growth to continue as we accelerate best of both and our convergence strategies. And finally, you've just got on the screen or on your screens, FTTP base, the installed base, and our 5G ready base. A couple of points I'll draw out here as well. Q1 on FTTP, it slowed because we physically couldn't get engineers out to our consumers' homes. We are now seeing in Q2 a pickup of that, and you'll see that growth trajectory improving going forwards. Equally, on 5G, we launched a new portfolio of 5G ready tariffs. You can see that step up in Q1, and we're seeing encouraging signs as we go forward, which in future we will also report against. And with that, I will hand back to Mark to just wrap up and then lead us into Q&A. Mark.
Stephen, thanks very much. I think it's great that we're adding metrics that more closely reflect our strategy and the strategic products that we're most focused on. So thanks for you and the team doing all that work, and I'm sure the community we're talking to now will really appreciate that. So just to summarize, before we go to Q&A, what we've covered today, and we will be able to take questions, of course, on everything we've talked about today and anything else that's on your mind. We've taken you through the progress that we've making on loyalty gap fairness, market pricing, and how we've seen that. I've shared with you how much progress we've made on our brand and service platform, which is setting us up really nicely when we look into the future to attract and retain more customers with more confidence. We've opened up how we think about convergence and the opportunity ahead there, both through Halo and Best of Both, and how we're thinking about the execution of convergence. I've opened up on distribution, what's been going on in recent months, but also over the last few years, and how we're evolving to a direct and digital first model. And Stephen's just opened up the new metrics that can help you all understand the consumer performance better than you do today. So with that, I think it is time to go to Q&A. If I could ask you, firstly, I would say this is a consumer business briefing, so ideally keep your questions to the consumer business. I'll do my best across the company, but ideally please keep them consumer business focused, number one. Number two, please, I know there are many people already who want to ask questions, so please try and keep it to one question so everybody can ask a question. That would be appreciated as well. And I'm going to hand over to Joe now, who's going to tell you how to ask a question, and we'll go from there.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, star and then one on your telephone. If you then decide to withdraw your question, simply key star and two. All questions will be answered in the order received, and you will be advised when to ask your question. All other lines will remain on listen only. And just a quick reminder, to ask a question, it's star and then one on your telephone. Our first question comes from the line of Charlotte Perfect at Arete Research. Please proceed, Charlotte, you're live in the call.
Hello, hi. Thanks very much for the updates there. It's very useful. I was just wondering if, to keep to one question, I suppose I would choose just if there are insights or nuggets from your consumer surveys around the demand, the future demand for FTTP, and the appetite to pay more for that, and whether the demand is based more around the reliability aspect or the bandwidth aspect. I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Yeah, hi Charlotte. Great question, and I'll ask you perhaps to talk about some of the early insights that we've seen on full fiber. We are certainly seeing, as you've seen by the uptake in full fiber, particularly in the last couple of years, where we've gone from zero to north of 500,000 customers very quickly, a pretty good demand, a healthy demand for a faster, more reliable network, and I do see consumers valuing the fact that they're getting an upgrade, like we saw from 3G to 4G and 4G to 5G. We're seeing with fiber that we are seeing a willingness to pay a little bit more, just a few pounds more for a faster, better service. We don't see that as a problem whatsoever, and the uptake is really strong, and certainly from an NPS point of view and how customers are feeling about the product, very positive. But perhaps, Christian, you want to give some early insights into the FTTP experience?
Yeah. No, but as you see, I mean, customers are using their line significantly more. So as you start using it, you increase your awareness around this. One of the challenges that we see at the moment is that we're rolling out area by area. So this is not yet sort of a nationwide phenomenon. So it's basically something that customers are experiencing as you roll out pocket by pocket, city by city. So the awareness in those areas is, are significantly higher. There is clearly an interest and a demand for driving those higher speeds. So that's what we see at the moment.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, actually. If you remember back to the chart that I shared where the data growth on FTTP versus C was more than double, that's such a great indication of the fact that customers are using more and more data on more and more devices to do more and more things. And we see this all the time in mobile and fixed. If you open up the pipe, open up the speed, make the experiences available to people, they will use them. And that's one of the great indicators of how they value the product as well. Charlotte, thank you for your question. I think it's Michael next.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Michael Bishop at Goldman Sachs. Please see, Michael, you're live in the call. Thank you.
Thanks. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for the presentation. I was just wanted to pick up on the UK convergence data point. So this 16% moving to 21% this year and the new metric. I was just wondering, from a big picture perspective, you know, that feels, you know, relatively slow. So do you think that's the UK telco market being quite reluctant to take convergence and needing more of a push versus other markets? Or do you think it's more that you just didn't have the right portfolio of tariffs in place to really encourage customers? Thanks.
Yeah, hi, Michael. Thanks for the question. Again, I'll ask Christian in a little while to sort of open up my first few thoughts on this. And of course, you got experience from another market as well. But I think we've been very careful here. We've seen a lot of countries chase a high percentage convergence number and destroy lots of value. And that's certainly been something that we've been very careful to avoid. As you've seen, and we've also shared with you some of the ARPU differences and the value between the brands, and so because we've got so many customers on so many brands to manage, we didn't think it would be very smart to drive a high percentage number of customers taking both products but destroy hundreds of millions of value, which is, you know, we've seen in other markets. So that's, I think that's the first point. We are. I would say, excited about the opportunity ahead of us to do it smartly and do it well. We're excited about the fact that we've got a great vehicle with Halo for our BT base, and we can now use best of both with all the capability we're building to grow the opportunity further. But perhaps, Christian, you want to open up to Michael?
Yeah, I mean, you hit some of the key points, obviously. I mean, this is, for me, it's important to look at this both with a push and a pull. And a push for me is not about just throwing a big discount. Push is about leveraging capabilities you have to have meaningful conversations with customers when you engage with them. And then there is a customer demand as well. I talked a little bit about how some of these things are developing now, but and then I talked about how this will develop over time as well. If I look at my own household, I'm sure many of you experience the same. If you have a couple of kids, you have multiple lines, and you start getting an Apple Watch or a tablet, the ability to connect these things and make it easier, I think, will be an increasing drive. And we see already many of the households we have start having multiple mobile lines. And then you have the value of starting to bring services across the two, which will drive some of this pull as well. But there is, I mean, we also see, I would say, sort of an increasing focus on from customers now in the economic climate to see whether they're able to save across the total spend. And if you start looking at your ability to capture value across the entire household, you have an opportunity to look into, to sort of play into that as well.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think just one last thought from me, Michael, is the other big part of driving convergence is capability and execution capability. And you'll have seen, and we've talked a little bit about in the last couple of years, the capabilities we've been building to get our data in a better place, to be able to link accounts between different products and brands and make all of that available to our sales and service teams who have to do a lot of the work in convincing customers to bundle more and more services together. So that's, I would say, if I was thinking of one thing that's maybe held back the opportunity is not having that capability a couple of years ago. A lot of it is in place now for us to accelerate convergence. It's not all done, as many large integrations are never done, but we've got a lot of the capability now to start driving convergence harder. Thank you for your question.
Yes, please. One more comment on the metric itself, which I think is important, yeah. And that is it's customers have got both fixed and mobile of a percentage of our entire base, so taking any product, whereas others in the marketplace report it as a percentage of their broadband base. So it will look like an artificially, or it will look like a higher percentage. You could argue we've been overly prudent, but it's a customer taking any product from us who have then got fixed and mobile.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying. Next question.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Paul Sidney at Credit Suisse. Please proceed, Paul. You're live in the call. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you very much for taking the question. I had a question on BT Sport, Mark. I'm just wondering, could you just run us through the mechanical moving parts of BT Sport revenues and costs over the past 6 months? Obviously, a lot of disruption from COVID, breaking it down, consumers, pubs, clubs, and wholesale in terms of billing levels and any rebates you're getting back from sporting bodies. Thank you.
Yeah. Hi, Paul. Thanks. I'll do my best. Some I can share. Some I can't. But I can give you a perspective. And Steve and Christian, please jump in as well. Firstly, you mentioned pubs and clubs. I think it's safe to assume that we will not be. I mean, that channel gave us. I think we opened up on this a couple of quarters ago. Between 8 and 10 million a month of revenue and margin. I think it's safe to say that it's very unlikely we're going to be getting anything near that for the foreseeable future. So that's certainly a drag to performance. We saw, obviously, with sport coming off air largely during the COVID period, we've seen our customer base bounce back pretty much to the same levels that we had before. And there's obviously a lot more games and content available for customers, but some customers are saying the experience isn't quite the same and are not as happy with the product, with stadiums not full as they were before. We have had some compensation from rights holders. We are clear that the cost base needs to be the same or less. Certainly my focus will be on less going forward in a more volatile market. We've seen real success from the monthly pass. I think a lot of customers valuing a more flexible approach to sport. And the wholesale revenues, minus pubs and clubs, largely stable. That's about as far as I can go. The pricing, I think I've talked to you about in the sense that sport and TV move to this new mechanic as well, so that will give us a much more predictable way of managing the top line. I don't know if I've missed anything on...
No, that's a very fair summary. We're executing against the strategy we set out last time to drive pricing. All of our customers now pay, as you said earlier, and we're driving revenue by maximising distribution across all of our bases.
Yeah.
And we're in line with our strategy, bar the blip of pubs and clubs, I think, is that.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, can I just have a quick follow-up? Did you have a full 3 months of billing consumers in the 3 months ended September? Mark, when did you return to billing them or not allowing them the discount?
Yeah, now sport is back on. You're not able to get a credit as a customer. That's right. Okay, Paul. Thank you very much. I think the next question is Sam McHugh.
Thank you. And Sam McHugh from Exane, please proceed. You're now live in the call.
Yeah, thanks very much. Bit of a long-winded one, sorry, so bear with me 1 second. So quite a bit has been made in the press recently about other CPs signing long-term contracts for fibre with Overreach. But obviously your incentive to sign long-term contracts with them is a bit different to other people, giving anything you pay with them does stay within the group, and you don't have access to other third-party networks. So I guess the question is, have you signed any long-term contracts with Overreach? And how much do you worry that may constrain you in your ability to compete if your competitors have access to cheaper wholesale costs from other parties? And I guess just linked to it, would you ever consider signing with anyone else? And I guess I know the answer is probably not. Thank you very much.
Sam, thank you. I think there's a couple of things in there. Let's start with the altnets, which I think was the last part to your question. We are open-minded. I mean, we're clear that if an altnet has scale and has relevance in a place where we can't get access to a full fiber network that Openreach is building, we are open-minded to partnering with an altnet. What we haven't yet seen is any real scale and opportunity that provides, but I remain open-minded to that, and I think that's important to say. I think our enterprise colleagues have said something very similar as well. I think on full fiber, obviously lots moving around with regards to negotiations of pricing and contract length and all that kind of stuff. We just deal with Openreach like a supplier. They're a large supplier like any other supplier. And for us, the focus is on pioneering ahead as we are with 5G, as we did with 4G. With the fastest, best network capability that's there. We see good demand from customers. It's an opportunity for us to hold on to the customers we have or win new customers, and that's what we're focused on. And, whatever the price is, we'll price it at the right level and compete in the marketplace, and it's off to a good start. That's about all I can say on that. But thank you for your question, Sam.
Our next question comes from the line of Nick Lyle from SocGen. Please proceed, you're live in the call, Nick.
Thanks very much. There's a quick question about the broadband churn, please, Mark. Just, I think 14 to 16% still seems a little higher than I thought, but what's the sort of realistic level of churn we should be thinking about for broadband, and particularly thinking about the broadband price rises you're going to be putting through the CP plus 3.9%. Could you also give us a little bit of an idea of the cost per gross add as well, so we can work it out either way, depending on which way churn starts to shift? Thanks very much.
Yeah, I could probably do most of what you've asked for, apart from the cost one, but let me talk to you first of all, just on the price mechanic. I just want to be really clear with everyone, because when you go back to the price mechanic that we had before, because the price rise was not part of your contract, that created a churn event. And it created a churn event on a very large scale, which is why our customer base has been going backwards for some time. It also created huge disruption in our service operations, in our call centers, who are dealing with all of those customers with whom we were breaking the contract and raising their prices, which led to the lowest satisfaction levels, the highest churn, and the highest complaints in the industry. So that's why I've changed the model. The new model does not create a churn event in contract. Most of our contracts now are 24 months, because it's part of the contract. When you sign up as a new customer or upgrade as an existing customer, part of the conversation we'll have with you is in 12 months' time, every spring, around March, your bill will go up in line with inflation plus the 3.9% mechanic. So it won't create a churn event of the scale that we've had before. It's too early to say at the end of that contract, what does that do for the customer? But I believe it's transparent, it's open, it's fair, and when you look at the average bill for most customers, it's a pound or so a month, and I think more than reasonable for all of the service support we give them, all of the enhancements they're getting in terms of tech experts and access to retail and UK-only call centres and complete Wi-Fi and all the wonderful stuff we're doing for them. So that's how we think about the churn side. What does good look like? Hard to say. It's certainly not 1.4, 1.6%. It's closer to 1. It's closer to 1. We're not there yet. I know you see in the graph that we were helped by the COVID period there. But underlying, we're in a much better place than we were, and the team have done a great job, and happier customers should mean more loyal customers. So I think as close to 1 as we can get is probably best in market, certainly in the UK. Other countries operate churn mechanics in different ways. Thank you.
And no sense of cost at all that you could give us a little bit of a hand with on some of the churn reduction numbers, what that might mean for either total cost or even just a CPGA number? Just on broadband.
In terms of churn reduction?
Yeah, well, what that would mean for the cost base and what we could, I mean, you gave some cost numbers in the presentation, but if we could work out a little bit what the churn reduction might mean for cost as well.
Yeah, well, the churn reduction really is about maintaining the customer base and helping the revenue and the margin, but I wouldn't think of it as a cost-saving opportunity so much, unless you're implying that if we are better at churn, we'll be less active in the acquisition market, which does create some cost per connection, and that depends on which channel you get it through. I think that's about as far as I can talk to on that one, but we're not thinking about it as a cost saving opportunity. We're thinking about it as a how could we grow our base more opportunity by leaking less customers out the bottom.
Okay.
Hope that helps.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Maurice Patrick at Barclays. Please proceed, Maurice.
Oh, thank you very much. Afternoon, guys, and thanks for doing the session. Question really on the £100 to £200 million cost saving. I mean, you've highlighted coming out of Carphone Warehouse, you've talked about 90% of connections being direct. I'm assuming it was less than that whilst you were using last year. But how much of that £100 to £200 million is coming from the change in distribution model, so exiting Carphone Warehouse versus other digitalization mechanisms you're doing? Thank you.
Yeah, hi, Maurice. Thanks for the question. Actually, the 90% figure was even with Vixen's car phone in the portfolio. So they're the transactions across BT, EE, PlusNet, sales, upgrades, broadband, mobile, etc. So we're very much a direct model, irrespective of that exit. The 1 to 200 million, I think the way to think about it is, yeah, there is some efficiency in terms of the direct model there. Talking a little bit to the last question, put on some marketing efficiencies with a stronger direct channel, yes. The digital channel does cost us less per acquisition or upgrade than tele or retail if we get that right. So there's a savings there of the channel shift from estates with rent and retail and people, etc. But there's also, as we think about digital, and perhaps Christian, you just expand on this, we think also about the need to transform digital is the need, the enabler. It's a simpler product portfolio, taking away a lot of the products and processes that are very manual today, that don't add a lot of value, that do create some costs that we can eliminate through a more automated journey with simplified processes. Perhaps you want to expand on that?
No, I mean, definitely. I think you can look at the digital in a number of ways, but if you look at the way that customers transition to what I like to talk about, a digital at core, I think all customers will expect that at the core, they have a relationship with us, which is digital, and we capture and understand them, which means that we are able to have relevant propositions to them as they move on their life cycle with us. It means that they're able to transact and serve themselves online, and that's going to reduce cost. It's going to be an opportunity for us to present them with relevant offers, which is an opportunity for us to upsell as well. So done well, you'll see a higher customer satisfaction, you'll see lower calls, a fewer calls and lower cost in customer service, and you'll see a revenue opportunity from digital. And I think that's really at the core of what customers are expecting from us.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Morris.
And just as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, it's star and then one on your telephone. And our next question comes from the line of Polo Tang at UBS. Please proceed, Polo.
Hi. Thanks for taking the question. So my question is really just coming back to the CPI plus 3.9% price rise. How should we think about the overall financial impact and also operational impact on the consumer unit? Because theoretically, this could be a £300 to £400 million pound increase in terms of revenues if it all drops through. But do you see a risk of market share loss or a spike in churn if you put through this price rise? And what gives you the confidence that you can hold on to the price increases and that the competition won't react and that your operating trends can still remain intact? Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Polo. Great question. There's a lot in there. Let me talk to a few of these points. I think let me start with market share. And in the pricing section, I think I explained very clearly that we know we need to compete for share, and we're keen to maintain and grow the performance that we've seen with our new pricing strategy. And we know we need to compete there and win customers. And so we have a pricing strategy that has very attractive entry-level prices for those that are interested in that, right through to the fully converged more-for-more portfolio. And that's had a lot of success. And as I said, that moves up and down according to the marketplace. And then we upsell from there. So that's been attractive at helping us win in the market and then upsell from there and do our best to maintain and grow ARPU. So that's the first point. Do I see the CPI mechanic as being an anchor or a handbrake to market share and sales momentum? No, I don't. I think the key moment, as you rightly say, will be the point in a year's time when the customer's bill lands and at the point where their contract ends. Now, from experience, we've seen if you think about the mobile market, we've had many, many years now with an RPI mechanic, with price inflation averaging 3 to 5% over the last few years with RPI. And that hasn't created any real instability in the marketplace in terms of churn and so on. You also mentioned the stability in the operation, and that is a really important point, because increasingly, as we talked about, the growth in convergence, broadband, mobile, TV, best of both, brands coming together. For many customers, we were sending three or four letters at different times, and all of those requests were coming into our contact center operation. So we know we've got a big event in April where we deal with the price rise, and then the other 11 months of the year, we're free to serve our customers brilliantly and sell and drive convergence. How much of the 3.9 flows to the from a gross to net point of view, we'll have to wait and see. I certainly wouldn't assume all of it. But it will help us hedge low inflation. It helps us get a lot of predictability in the marketplace. Inevitably, there'll be some customers at the end of their first year, second year, that want to renegotiate the price down, get a different package. We do some more for more activity, and that will bring that gross figure down to a net number. But we're 2 years away from knowing exactly what that is. But we do, as I say, we have good experience in a very large customer base in mobile with a very similar mechanic.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from the line of James Ratzer at New Street Research. Please proceed, James. You're live in the call.
Yes, thank you very much indeed. In fact, my question was a bit of a follow-up from Polo's just then, which is really to kind of drill down a bit further on this. I mean, why did you choose 3.9% specifically as the kind of CPI inflator here? I mean, is this presumably linked to the rising costs you're going to see in payments to Openreach, or is this kind of predicated on how much upsell you're expecting to FTTH? And then within that, I mean, how much scope do you have now in consumer to cut costs more broadly to try to then boost EBITDA to against hedge against these rising data costs? We've talked a little bit about some of the savings from channel optimization, but maybe you could talk more broadly to the potential to actually reduce the net costs in consumer outside of those costs you pay to Openreach. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Very good question. And Stephen, Christian, I'm sure I'm going to bring you in to open up some of these points. Firstly, let's start with the mechanic. I think I've talked you through, or did my best to explain, how we see the need to invest in network and service and brand. Our belief is that we're here to offer the best network and service connection and experience in the marketplace. That's our role. We're not here to be the cheapest in the market. We're here to be the best in the market. And you know, that's the way we think about things. Our customers may be able to buy cheaper, but they'll never be able to buy better. And that does require investment. It requires investment in 5G, in 4G, in vendor swap outs, in more coverage in more places than anywhere else, case studies to bring 5G to life, retail, brilliant tech experts, UK-only call centres, all the things we've talked about that our customers get that no other customer will get, and long-term they're going to value that. That does come at a price, and as I said before, you know, this is the only industry I can think of where you use 50% more stuff every year and don't see any substantial increase in your bill, and I think we need to lead the way in terms of how we're thinking about that. We do see growth in costs in the core network, so those data cost that I was showing you, that's not Openreach, that's core network costs that we need to recover, plus all the other investments in mobile. So, you know, we looked at, you know, customers' propensity to buy, upgrade, we looked at churn, we looked at, you know, like Polo's question, how much goes from a gross to a net figure, how much do we need to invest, and that's how we came up with the number. At the same time, we were looking at a low inflationary environment for the next few years, so we need to hedge against that. At the same time, we also know we want to create consistency across our portfolio because we want to drive convergence. We want to create consistency across our brands because we want to help the brands come together more closely. And we want to create more stability in the operation. That's how we're thinking about it. Cost. Because there were two parts to your question. So that's that. Let's talk about cost.
Maybe I can take a bit on that one. Yeah. We have a big program called Simplify, which at the core is about getting on to a new modern platform that drives completely new digital journeys. And as part of that journey, it is instrumental that we simplify our business. And that's back to the business rules, it's back to the products, it's back to migrating off legacy platforms, it's about getting onto new systems. And as we do that, we're able to decommission systems, platforms, which take out costs in the total value chain. As we simplify and we get sort of a more simple portfolio for our customers, we also create an opportunity for digital to create more digital experiences. I talked about that before. And that essentially helps take out customer service costs. So there is sort of a value chain effect in our ability to take out costs, which I would say is it's a quite important component of our ability to take out costs.
Yeah. Stephen, any other thoughts on the cost base?
I just reflect on the fact that Mark and I have worked together for 9 years now and went through Orange and T-Mobile coming together and how you drive revenue whilst taking out costs. We did it again as EE became part of the BT group. We've done it again as consumer was formed. So we've almost gone through three integrations effectively, knowing how to drive costs out of our organization whilst growing revenue, whilst improving customer service. So it's something we focus on both constantly, and you'll see that play out in the long term for consumer.
Yeah, there's other group programs, I think, that will help us a lot. Big focus on procurement at the moment and procurement savings, and we'll be the beneficiaries of that. And we're working very closely with our colleagues to look at consolidating our supplier base and get better terms as well. So that's probably one other area we'd mention.
Does that mean thank you as part of that simplification process we can see margins in BT Consumer start to rise from here?
Well, as you know, we don't give forward guidance. What we're trying to help you all understand here is on the top line, I think there's a very clear opportunity of convergence and our new pricing mechanic that we've put in place, as well as deal with a lot of the legacy issues that were a bit of a drag for us. So hopefully you got a good feel for that. And then on the cost base, we've talked about the digitization opportunity, plus the simplification of our products and portfolio and other programs like procurement that are all there to reduce costs. We also have headwinds of the need to invest in network, swap out vendors. We've got growth in data. We've got growth in core network as customers are using more data as we move to full fiber. So those two net each other out. Obviously, our intention is we do improve margins, but we're just explaining very much the headwinds and the tailwinds today to help you understand them better.
Mark, thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Adam Fox-Ramney from HSBC. Please proceed, Adam. You're live in the call.
Thank you very much. The best of both approach that you described today feels like a bit of a change from the last presentation that we had from you, where each brand was really addressing different cohorts of customers. So my question is really whether three brands is really right, the right long-term approach, not really thinking from a cost perspective per se, but from a simplicity one. Are we really just in a kind of waymarked position at the moment on the way to two brands in due course? Thank you.
Yeah, great question. One we think about a lot, and I'm going to ask Christian to think about to talk about best of both and the rationale there. You're right. I think it's fair to say 2 years on, two and a half years on since the last update, yeah, our thinking has changed. We've learned a lot more about what we can be successful with the BT brand, where we can be successful with the EE brand, and our customer and channel reaction to the two brands being there side by side. And we've been really encouraged by that. And I believe it is important in a market that changes so quickly to evolve and adapt and not cling on to plans that aren't as effective as a new one. So it is a change in approach, and we're being very honest about that. And we see a lot of opportunity with this approach. Where we go next and long term, it's a tricky one. Not an easy answer. And I'm glad you say it's less about cost, because it is less about cost. You know, I think that moving to one brand doesn't realise huge savings. It's simpler, yes, but in the end, what really matters is what customers want and what creates the best outcomes, and that's what we're figuring out as we go at the moment with the portfolio we have. Christian.
Yeah, but I would probably add a couple of aspects to this. I would start looking at the capabilities first. It's about building a set of capabilities that allows us to work and operate in a different way. And we've made progress, and we are now able to bring two brands out and activate them in a different way. Then the other thing I would look at is what is happening in the market. And we see a quite fundamental change in 5G coming in, more focus on mobile coming in. And we have a brand which is number one for all major segments. Highest first choice purchase intent, strongest brand, strongest mobile network in the country. Would we want to feel that towards our entire base? Yes, we would. We look at an opportunity now where we need to go and win fiber households as fiber is being rolled out across the UK. We have a very strong brand with BT, reliable, fast, low latency, high awareness, higher consideration, higher first choice purchase intent. Would we want to use that? Of course. So that's where we are now, and then it'll be up to us to make sure that we bring this together in a way that is meaningful for customers and drive value over time. But we believe that that's a way to really drive more value and stronger solutions for the households and the customers that we serve, and also drive a higher value for us as a business.
Can I just follow up very, very briefly? There was an article, I think, last week that said you were dropping 5G from the BT Mobile brand, if I recall correctly. Could you explain why that was the case?
Yeah, unfortunately, the article were misrepresented our position, actually. So we're not dropping it. This is all about leading, which brand leads. So as Christian said there, our customer reaction is better when we talk to them about 5G handsets, when we talk to them with EE. And the conversion rate of our sales teams, as we showed, is a third higher as well. So we lead with EE. If the customer says, no, I want to be on BT Mobile, I've seen this price proposition package, they absolutely can buy it, and all our plans on BT Mobile are 5G ready. It's just about which brand we're leading on. I think there was a misunderstanding from the author of the article. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from the line of Nick Delfast from Redburn. Please proceed, Nick, you're live in the call.
Yeah, thanks very much. Just a couple, please. I'm not sure if you gave us the split between digital and bricks and mortar in terms of your distribution. If you could do that, that would be great. And also on fixed mobile conversion, I just wanted to understand, I think you've added about 1 percentage point on the base. Do you expect in a year, do you expect that to accelerate from here? How do you think that's going to trend? Thanks very much.
Good question. I'm not going to give all the details. I think it's a tricky one for me here because we've opened up a lot of data and it's to help you, but what I don't want to do is help the competition as well. So it's a tricky one. But retail and our contact centers are big parts of our distribution. There's no doubt about that. But as we've shown, I think you're probably questioning, okay, 100% from what base is the upgrade? A pretty healthy base of contribution from digital, and it's doubled in just a few weeks' time. And as we showed, a 2 to 3 times increase would make it, in 5 years' time, would make it more or less our biggest. It would make it our biggest channel. There you go. That's probably the best I can say on that. I'm now trying to remember the second. There was a second part of your question.
The fixed mobile conversion.
The convergence and how we see that going forward. Again, I don't want to give any forward direction on that, but you can see from us that the opportunity for convergence is there. We've got the capability, we've got the brands, we've got the channels. It's a big focus for us. I'm hopeful we can accelerate it, but we want to do it smartly. We want to create value. It's not about, we don't want to just be chasing a number, whether it's 25, 30, 40%, if it's destroying value. We've got to do this smartly and well, and that's more important to us than what percentage it is.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. And our next question comes from the line of David Wright at Bank of America. Please proceed, David.
Okay, thank you, guys. Thank you for taking the calls today. I guess I'm just coming back to this CPI plus 3.9. Again, I know you've had a couple of questions from Paula and James, but when I do refer back to slide 10 and the turnaround, the inflection point in net adds, in monthly churn, and in NPS, it does also coincide very clearly with your price freeze. And going back to the CPI plus 3.9 is an effective, you know, let's call it 6% or so, which very much puts you back in the ballpark of the price rises you did used to introduce. So I guess, you know, you are obviously embarking upon a more for more dynamic, but, you know, when you talk about claiming back the costs of data usage, you know, you should have lower customer care costs through the more reliable fiber service, for example. That's all the messaging we're getting from Openreach. And of course, you know, they are benefiting from some of the efficiencies too with their higher return on capital. So is this not just a risk in that you've got this impressive momentum and then you lose it once more? And I refer to, you know, Virgin Media choosing not to raise prices this year. And obviously, if Openreach is selling volume discounts, then I'm sure Vodafone will be continuing to push with its aggressive promotions too. So is this not just the risk that you kind of end up back where you were with that same negative trajectory? Thanks.
There's a few things in there. Firstly, the improvement in NPS, complaints, brand satisfaction is a number of factors. And I think the CPI pricing mechanic, I would say, has been one of the least important ones. The turnaround in the service platform, the hard work of our team in getting our BT call centres to operate at a much better level for customers, the introduction of retail, the introduction of home tech experts and products like Complete Wi-Fi and Halo and all of those things we talked about, the pricing cap, the copper customer migrations, they're all the things that have been driving a lot of this performance. Second point I think is important is, as I mentioned to you before, we've lived with this mechanic for many years at a similar level in mobile. And I refer you back to the growth in EE's brand NPS from 0 to 20. With a mechanic like that, at levels like that, as long as you're improving proposition, convenience, experience, innovation, service platform, digital capability for customers, it is possible to do both. And thirdly, I believe that this is necessary in this market. You mentioned Virgin, and Virgin may have frozen prices, but Virgin also have huge out-of-contract price rises for customers, with no cap and no certainty. And I don't believe that's a sustainable mechanic. I'd much rather be in a place where when I talk to my customers and they're either joining us or upgrading with us, they know exactly what's happening, exactly when it's happening, and exactly to which amount, rather than the very random nature of this industry, not us now, with this new mechanic, where price rises happen to you whenever the operator felt like it, at whatever the amount, at multiple times of the year. I don't believe that's a sustainable mechanic. This is a much better mechanic. Is it a risk? I think it's a risk to pervade the mechanic that's in the industry and been in the industry for many years.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Carl Murdoch-Smith at Berenberg. Please proceed. You're live in the call, Carl.
Hi, guys. Hope you're doing okay. Just wanted to come back to your comments about rationality in sports auctions. Obviously, the last Premier League rights auction was in early 2018. So by that logic, is it correct to expect the next Premier League auction kind of in early 2021? And then in terms of rights auctions, since COVID's become kind of more apparent, we've seen Telefonica paying a double-digit amount less for its Champions League rights going forward. And should we expect a similar kind of impact from BT and less aggression and ultimately lower costs in the upcoming auction? Thank you.
Yeah, hi, Carl. Thanks. And all safe and well here. Hope you're well too. Thank you for the question. I can't comment on the auction timeline. I think it's likely in 21, but you'd have to speak to the Premier League about that. I'm certainly keen that we have some rationality when we think about pricing in auctions. You've seen the discipline that we've shown in not creating an inflationary environment for sports rights, and my goal ideally is to pay less for what we have today. I do not want to be subsidising sport any more than we do today and improving our contribution. So hopefully that gives you an indication of how we'll be thinking about it. It's hard to predict the outcome of an auction, of course, but I can tell you how I'm thinking about going into it. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Jerry Jellis from Jefferies. Please proceed, Jerry.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my question. It's a question about the commercialization of fibre, please. I think most of Openreach's fibre is being built in the fibre city areas, so areas of legacy cable coverage where maybe BT Retail's market share is relatively low. So what are your commercial tactics, please, as you start to commercialize the fibre offer? Is it likely to be a form of conquest, perhaps to win back some of the market share that you lost over the last 3 or 4 years, or do you feel the need to be a bit less bold than that? Thank you.
Yeah, great question. I think anywhere where we have low market share and an opportunity to put customers on a better product than we've had before is an opportunity for us. Full fiber, like 5G and 4G, is a regional rollout, and so we don't think about this as a nationwide exercise. And so the great thing now, with all the data and the capability that Christian's been alluding to, we can be very smart and targeted in how we think about pricing to our customers and convincing them to join us. We've got a great nationwide sales and service platform that's unrivaled by any operator, and so that remains an opportunity for us to grow share in areas where we've lost share previously. But we'll be doing it rationally, we'll be doing it smartly, and we'll be doing it for all the right reasons for customers.
Thank you.
Thank you. And just a quick reminder, if you would like to ask a question, it's star and then one on your telephone. And our next question comes from Sia He from Citi. Please proceed, Sia.
Hello. Hi. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my questions. I just want to go back to page 25, and I just want to have if you can clarify that it seems that the loyalty gap, the pressure on the loyalty gap for the coming 3 years, it looks higher than the one that has already been through. If you could just let me know whether that is a correct understanding, and maybe you can comment on how many customers are yet to get migrated from the out of bundle £13 extra to the new contract. Thank you very much.
I'll try and answer your question. I think I've got it, because there's about three parts there. So firstly, all customers now are on the price cap, or if they're a Halo customer, they have no out of contract price rise. That's how you should think about the entirety of the customer base. I think you were asking, is the drop from 20 to 23 bigger than the drop from 18 to 20? Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Yes. But you know, not of a huge magnitude, but it is slightly greater. Why is that? We've got a bigger Halo base with all those customers with no out-of-contract price rises. We're seeing the full benefit of the copper migration, the reduction in the price cap from 8 to 5. So all of those factors, plus the pricing mechanic we've got, all contributing to a 50% reduction from where we are today. I think that's answered all your questions. Is that right?
Yes, thank you very much.
Excellent. Well, Joe, I think that was the last question. I think we're done. I think that's an excellent set of questions. Thank you for taking the time. I hope you found it useful, and we'll see you all very soon.